and welcome to Futures Focus, a fantasy baseball podcast centering around all the top prospects in the game, brought to you by Prospects 1500.
My name is Alex Sanchez, and joining me fresh from his trip off to the Tropic Mexico lands is Nate Eckert, and also joining us tonight is a special guest, Michael Kelly. Gentlemen, how are we doing? Nate, first I'll go to you. Are you all recovered? Got that sun out of, you know, curing any ailments you might have had?
Oh, absolutely. I've got that beautiful, like, sun-kissed kind of look going on. My hair is so on point. I don't even have to put any product in it or anything. It's just that beautiful salt water meets Cabo San Lucas sun. Right now I'm feeling like I'm on top of the world.
And I'm sure you did some scouting down there too. Well,
of course. I scouted the infinity pool, some snorkeling. What else? Ooh, was it a golf, the golf course there? Oh man, it was mighty sweet.
And then we got my doppelganger, in a sense, Michael Kelly, joining us, a fellow Braves fan, and also you're a Notre Dame fan too, right?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, so my favorite college team as well. Probably my top two teams if I had to pick favorite teams. So I feel like it's kind of a weird combination, but we've met here.
Kismet.
Yeah. So, Michael, thanks for joining us. You are partially responsible for the NL East in terms of the Braves. Did you do some of the other ones too? I hadn't had a chance to look at those.
I did not. For this, was just the Braves. I did some on the Cubs as well. But from a ranking standpoint, just the Braves.
Yeah. Save the best team. I get it. That makes a lot of sense. So, that's exactly what we're going to do tonight, is discuss the NL East. As we were sort of talking off air before recording, this is an interesting division. You have perhaps one of the top teams all in baseball, with a very shallow system, all the way to perhaps one of the best with the Washington Nationals. So there's a lot to get to today. We're going to try to get to all five. That's the goal. So before we do, let me just go over the quick reminder of the tier system here. I think it's very important when it comes to discussing these guys and where they might fit in to your dynasty teams and to your redraft leagues. So we have a tier system, tier one being guys that we expect to make all-star teams for a number of years. I think that's the key there. We have around, roughly on any given time, 30, 40 of those should be in the minor leagues, where we're pretty confident that when they come up, they're going to be very successful. After that, tier two are guys that we think are going to come up and make solid contributions to the big league. So again, very above average expectation that they're going to be big leaguers. After that, tier three, tier four are going to be the majority of players, along with tier five, with the average to guys that are sleepers, and then all the way to tier five that, hey, you know, maybe they get a cup of coffee or so. But I think these tiers are important. We ranked our top prospects in all of baseball this way as well. We'll get an episode very shortly going over the top prospects in all of baseball. That's a fun episode. But for today, we stick to the NL East. And I don't think it's too much of a homer move to start with the Atlanta Braves. Both alphabetically they work, and I'm the most excited to talk about them. So first question for you, Michael, is, you know, I'm willing to bet that, you know, there was how many people worked on this list? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 people worked on this list. And I'm going to take a guess that they had to convince you that there was no tier one players. Is that an accurate guess?
Actually, no. I don't think that the Braves have had a true tier one player in the minors. Probably since Acuna. I mean, Michael Harris has been great, don't get me wrong, but as I view him as a prospect, to me, he wasn't a tier one prospect in our tier ranking system. Now, you know, the guys that we have at the top, Smith, Shaver, and Waldrop, are probably going to prove me wrong. And I'm totally fine with that as a Braves fan. But they're awfully close to tier one for me.
Mike. Yeah, I think that to me, I think I have Waldrop and AJ Smith Shaver really, really close to the top 30. Take a look at my list. Yeah, I have Waldrop at 26 and Smith Shaver at 37. So in my mind, I can get on board with one of them being a tier one player. I just think Waldrop's splitter is filthy. What kind of rating do you put on that splitter? And what are your thoughts on just having a splitter in general be like that number one pitch? I know Kevin Gausman's kind of like the poster child for that working, but what are your thoughts on that pitch and how much confidence do you have in it?
As I was saying, with the splitter being as nasty as it is for Waldrop and hitters, you know, kind of moving towards this launch angle, you know, system, if you will, where they're just trying to just knock the ball out of the park. You know, when you have a splitter, it's going to cause a ton of swing and miss. So, really for Waldrop, it comes down to him throwing strikes. And if he does, he's going to, you know, be a potential ace.
What about you, Nate? Where do you these guys rank for you on your top 100? I'm going to guess I'm probably higher on both of them, but I want to hear your thoughts on maybe where they rank on your top 100.
Smith Shaver is probably right at 50. But with that being said, I don't want to divulge too much of my strategy regarding my redraft league, but I am fully set on targeting him, I'd say as my third or fourth starter, if that's at all possible. I love that kid. I wrote a tweet this morning actually and called him Spencer Strider 2.0, but I think I bit that from you, Alex, last year at some point.
I remember discussing that a little bit about how the Braves are doing this, like, let's just get these two pitches, your two best pitches with Strider. It was the fastball slider, right. And then get to the big leagues and then refine it. And I think the same sort of pathway for Smith Shaver has been happening. But now we're seeing that he has probably a deeper arsenal, at least when he hits his prime, than Strider probably ever
absolutely
will with four pitches. And then Waldrop's is interesting because it's, you know, a pitch you don't see all the time. But I think
Might
get a good interpretation of that. So yeah, I can get on board with thinking that, you know, the chances of them both being a tier one and all-stars are probably pretty low, but I mean, there's a reason why the Braves kept these guys. I mean, when they were looking for an outfielder, they settled on Kelnick. I mean, they got him for nothing, but these two guys could have really gotten them something and they chose to keep them. So what are your I think one more question for Mike. Do you think that they break the rotation? Do you think that Waldrop sees time in the bullpen? What do you think 2024 holds for those two?
I don't think either of them will break out of camp unless there's an injury that develops. But, you know, that being said, with Morton being above 40, you know, Chris Sale has been pretty fragile the last, you know, half decade, if you will. Those guys are going to miss some time throughout the year. They're just not going to go out and throw 32, 33 starts. So both of them will see time in the rotation this year. I just don't see it happening, you know, barring an injury in spring training.
Can I say one thing about Waldrop and that splitter?
Sure. You don't need to ask for permission. I think you can
just in general, I love starting pitchers who can throw a legit splitter because of exactly what you were saying earlier, Mikey. I think it was you talking about the launch angles, etc. I mean, splitters are so nasty. The reason why Tony Gonsolin was such ace material a couple of years ago in that first half, when I'm pretty sure he was like 12-0 at the All-Star break, was because of that splitter. Now, the rest of his stuff wasn't blow away by any stretch of the imagination. Yet that splitter is just so dominant when starters can throw it and throw it for strikes and throw it when they want to. I always try to invest in splitter heavy starters, because it's the one pitch that really, other than the ghost fork that Senga brought in last year, it's the only pitch that hitters don't have a whole lot of experience dealing with. And I think it's pretty obvious that hitters have a hard time seeing the splitter. So just like you were saying about a changeup a few weeks ago, Alex, I know that you've said that before about when a pitcher really impresses you, it's when he can throw a changeup. I'm right there with you. I love a circle change more than anybody also. But the splitter for me is just a little bit further up on the scale of this kid is going to be completely dominant once he gets that going along with the fastball. Because I mean, imagine trying to hit a splitter if you've got a rising fastball also. I mean, that's just, it's just like, you could basically flip a coin in the air and take a guess.
So with the splitter, it's also, to your point, some people can't throw them, right?
Exactly.
Anybody to throw a slider, a curveball, or a changeup.
Right.
But a splitter, if your fingers don't go a certain way, you can't throw it. Right. I do get worried, though, with arm troubles with splitters. It just feels like that puts so much emphasis on your forearm, and then we know where the forearm leads to. So,
of course.
That's a little scary. But let's move on here then to the next tier, because it's not hardly as interesting as the top two guys in the system. It's definitely one of the weaker systems in all of baseball. If you remove those top two pitchers, I mean, this wouldn't be much to get too excited about. But change my mind here, Mikey. In tier three, who's I have a couple of names I want to ask you about. I want to see if they are the names you mentioned too. But give me two guys that stand out to you in this tier that you're excited about.
Yeah. So the first guy off the top for me is Nacho Alvarez. I think his real name is Ignacio, but he's going by Nacho.
What a great name, by the way. What a great baseball name that is.
For me, I mean, he's the best hitter in the system right now. I mean, Jose Perdomo, the recent international signee, looks pretty good. But, I mean, we're talking about a 17-year-old. Nacho's 20. He's in high A ball. Probably gets to double A this year. Maybe triple A. But just a fun guy. He's got a great hit tool. You know, the power's coming on, but he doesn't have a ton of room for growth, you know, in the body. So he's about as big as he's going to be. He's not going to provide much speed, but, he's a great hitter. So I'm excited about him because, you know, the Braves just don't generally develop hitting prospects. They'll trade for guys. They're always pitching heavy. So excited for him. And then I'm really intrigued by J.R. Ritchie. He has undergone Tommy John, so he's working his way back. But when he was pitching, which was only 10 or 15 innings or whatever it was, he was pretty dominant. I think he was upwards of almost two strikeouts per inning. So he might be a bullpen guy, a power arm in the bullpen, and that's okay. But I'm just excited to see him get back on the mound and see if he can potentially work his way up to a tier two or maybe even a tier one level here in a couple years.
Only 20 years old also, Mikey, drafted in 2022 in that sandwich pick, 35th overall, only 20. So at 6'2", 185, I'd like to see him fill out a bit more after that Tommy John. And I'm right there with you. I'm a big fan of JR. Along with Nacho, I mean, man, I'm looking at this kid right now. That he is one thick 5'11", 190 is what they got listed at him. I mean, his legs are enormous.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Braves not being able to hit, have hitting prospects, though, Mikey. I think Austin Riley and Ozzy and Ronald and Mikey.
Well, I mean, you know, those guys have already graduated, but they're always going to be pitching heavy. So.
Yeah, they have been. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah. It's mainly because there's no room for any more hitting prospects. They just get rid of them. Like Vaughn Grissom, you're
like
out of
here. Like a Vaughn Grissom.
the one guy I was hoping you'd mention, although I do like both those guys, but seen some clips out of the spring camp for Giancarlo Solara. He was throwing gas. I didn't know he was throwing that hard, but he was hitting 98, 99 with a couple, you know, 89, 90 mile per hour sliders. Looks really athletic on the mound. Heard some great things about him, as you mentioned. Well, in the write-up, it's one of the biggest risers in 2023. He's a guy that I'm super excited about as well. And then I should mention, you did say Perdomo, and in the little, you know, he was signed after this list was finalized, which is kind of the way things go on the site this time of year. But you said he'd be in the top of tier three. I'm guessing probably right behind Alvarez, maybe in the 5-6 slot. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. I mean, there's probably nobody in the system that has better tools than that kid does. But again, he's 17, hasn't played any ball stateside. So, you know, I'll be a little bit pessimistic until I see that. But, you know, if you want to dream on some tools, he's got them.
Yeah, it is fun to dream on those tools. Tier four, just really quickly, don't need to spend a huge amount of time. I've been getting David McCabe wherever I can as like the future masher Austin Riley clone in my mind. I don't know if that's right. Anybody in that tier four that you like as well? We should keep an eye on.
Well, I mean, more so for real life baseball, but I've been seeing a lot of good things for Drake Baldwin, catcher out of Missouri State.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I mean, it's not sexy to dream on catchers or to, you know, catchers often don't pan out, but this guy's got really, really good defense, and he's pretty decent with the bat, and he's just a guy that you can easily see be a solid backup platoon type catcher role. So, you know, as Darno, ages, if you will, we might see Drake Baldwin kind of be the future backup behind Murphy, if you will.
And in tier five, I mean, there is a ton of players in this. I don't know if I've seen another list that had starting at number 18 going all the way to 50 in the same tier. It's pretty insane, but it gives you an idea of how top heavy this system is. But that's all right. You know, I'm fine with it. Mikey, what do you think?
Yeah. The Anthopoulos is still in the process of rebuilding the farm after, some of the penalties that were put down on them by MLB with the prior regime there in the front office. So, he still has some work to do in that front. But I'm pretty confident that the front office will get it together and the Braves will eventually get back to having a top five, top 10 type farm system.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you say from 15 to 50? Is that what you said, Alex?
18 to 50. Yeah.
Okay, so 18 to 50. What do you think over under on, let's say 15 of those 18? What was it, 18 to 50?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, let's say over under 15 of those guys making tier three by the end of the season.
Under.
Yeah, I was gonna go under, but I thought you were gonna say like make the big leagues. So, but then you changed.
No.
I gotta agree. Like honestly.
What are you thinking? Like 10?
I was thinking single digits, like 4.
Yeah. Under.
Oh, yep. Damn. Damn,
you said one and a half. I would have had to think about it.
I don't think you'd make a good bookie there in Vegas, Nate. So.
Why not? I mean, it's the Braves, and you said it yourself, Mike. He's Anthopoulos. I mean, he's a genius, And yeah, he's dealing with the previous regime screw up, but you know, Luis de Avila, I like him a lot. Tavares, Ambrosio Tavares, Isaiah Drake. I mean, a lot of, I feel like a lot of these kids have some high ceiling. They're all young, more or less, except for Winans and Jesse Franklin. But every last one of them are 22 and under, pretty much.
I'd certainly take it, but let's go ahead and take a break here. We'll come back and we'll finish up the division. I promise that's the goal today. We are going to get to all the teams, but we'll go ahead and take a short break and we'll be right back. Futures Focus. Don't go anywhere.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Futures Focus here with you. My name, Alex Sanchez, Nate Eckert, and Michael Kelly joining me as we finish up the rest of the NL East Top 50 prospects. We just got done with the Atlanta Braves. We move on to the Miami Marlins, a team that, you know, you would think would have this killer system with, the major leagues being there. And then you look at this and you get a little underwhelmed. I totally agree that there are no tier one players, but the system is led by recent drafted right-handed pitcher Noble Meyer with another Meyer, Max Meyer, coming in at number two. And that's it for, you know, top one, tier one, tier two players. And then we get into tier three, which is relatively short as well, with Thomas White, Xavier Edwards, Jacob Bailey, Jacob Berry, and Jacob Amaya. And boom, we're already in tier four. So this system's underwhelming, to say the least. But maybe, Nate, you can convince me that these two arms give this system hope for the future.
I love Noble Meyer, as much as I love, as much as I can love a 19-year-old who's only thrown, 11 innings last year after he was drafted. But I must say, after seeing him in real life at the draft, this kid is big. He's got a great frame. 6'5", 185 is what I'm looking at right now, is what he's listed at. He's going to fill into that. Of course, there's going to be some sort of injury along the way. There just has to be. This is the Miami Marlins we're talking about here. I hate to say it, Noble, but eventually you're going to have Tommy John, UCL, ACL, something. I just hope that he's young enough still that he can come back, or he could just prove me wrong completely, and I completely whiffed on that one. But of the, I don't know, four players that showed up to the draft this last year, Meyer was the second one taken behind Jacob Wilson. Come on. Thank you. That's what I was thinking it was, but I wasn't quite sure. After Jacob Wilson. And, if absolutely nothing else, I got to give him style points because he had this pair of dunks on, these low dunks that were perfect for getting drafted to the Marlins. They were like teal and gray and a little bit of orange. And Sean Kirahan and I just looked at one another and said, he had to have known he was going to Miami. I mean, how else would you put together such an incredible outfit? So anyway, I saw Max Meyer. I was to my pleasure, saw him deal a couple of days ago. If it wasn't yesterday, it was a couple of days ago in spring training. He went two innings, looked really sharp. I think someone that's getting lost a bit in the shake of things after a subpar debut was, and really the first couple of seasons of his career, is Jacob Berry. I thought for sure he was going to come out and crush, yet he hasn't. But I could tell you one name that I really am excited about, and that's Carson Milbrandt, taken in 2022 in the third round, 6'2", 190, still got some room to grow. Great fastball, good curve, good changeup. I don't know. It's just something about this kid I really love. And Dax Fulton is my dark horse of the system. 6'7", 235. He's had enviable seasons past, but he's also had some injuries along the way. He was drafted after having Tommy John, and he was still taken 40th overall. By the Marlins, but this is a kid who dominates you with his curve because it's a hammer. I think it breaks probably 50-something inches on its way toward the plate. He also has a slider that breaks pretty goddamn hard. Fastball, he can locate really well. But last year in Double A, like a lot of young kids, he ran into that Double A wall. So I'm really interested to see how Dax Fulton does this year, coming into what he will know is going to be Double A again. And I'm very curious to see what he looks like and how he performs, because after this season, if he doesn't show out, then he's done, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with your Jacob Berry take that I was maybe a little bit too high on him. I thought he was going to be a big riser on ranks coming into this season after what he should have done in my eyes last year. Mike, let me go to you. How did you fit both Myers on your top 100 list? Did they make it for you?
Yeah, I don't recall specifically, but I just thinking about them, I would think that they're probably both in the top 100, with Max Meyer probably being a little bit further down because of the injury. Plus, I think even before the injury, with his size, there was some definite reliever concerns, and his ability to hold up. And unfortunately, that kind of came to fruition a little bit with the injury. But I would say it's probably those two and only those two. For me in the top 100.
Yeah, I had to cut Barry off of mine, and I had them actually back to back, 90 and 91 for my top 100. But Max Meyer, though, it's probably too late now since he's kind of back and you've seen him already in the spring training, but he was a guy that you probably could buy. Maybe you still can as a buy low. I think his value is really, really low right now. These are the type of guys that you got to just remember. We'll get to like Andrew Painter later too, that when they get that injury and they miss the season, don't wait too long if you believed in them, right? I mean,
right.
You guys are young enough that they're probably coming back to what they were. Doesn't mean that they're going to make it, because they might never have made it, you know, but they're going to be back to who they were with, which made you love them in the first place. So don't forget that. Mikey, anybody else? I mean, what do you think overall about this system? Give me kind of a general summary of it. And then if there's anybody we haven't mentioned that we could go over, and then I'll give my final thoughts and we can move on.
Yeah, so we talked about the Braves not having a great system. I actually think the Marlins might have a worse system. there might be a little bit more depth in the Marlins system, but I think the ceiling that some of the top Braves guys has, it exceeds the ceiling of the Marlins as a whole. Nate mentioned Carson Milbrandt. I like him as well. He's a Missouri kid. My son's school got to play against his school when he was a senior, and he was as good as advertised against high school competition. Wow. He did, wow. You know, he did struggle a little bit in the minors, but he's only 19. So, you know, this year I looked to see him take a next step. Another guy that's probably a back end of the bullpen or back end of the rotation kind of guy is Patrick Monteverde.
That was Alex's boy last year.
He was at the Futures game. I got to meet him when I was out there. Nice, very nice guy, very quiet. You know, definitely not an alpha, if you will, but you know, he's an older prospect. I think he's 26 now. So you know, not the highest of ceilings, but you know, I think he's got a great shot to, you know, pitch some major league innings this year. So
yeah, he's the most obvious first person to come up and fill out the rotation and just have like a 4 ERA, and you're kind of okay with it. And it's a nice ballpark, just, you know, depending on your league, you know, if wins are really important or quality starts, I don't know if he's your guy, but if you need innings and you need maybe some strikeouts, I mean, you're striking out guys at a pretty decent clip for a guy that doesn't have crazy stuff. He's got to get that alpha mentality, but, all right, let's go ahead and move on. Let's get to perhaps a little bit more deep of a system. Let's move on to the Nationals. I think this one is deserving of our time because there's so many exciting guys to talk about here. So let's go over the top guys here, and then we'll probably have to start with each one individually. But we got Dylan Cruz, number one overall, no surprise. James Wood at number two overall, tier one. Again, no surprise there. Tier two, Brady House. Cade Cavalli coming in at number four. Yohandy Morales at number five in the start of tier three. Dalen Lyle, Christian Vaquero, Elijah Green, Robert Hassel the third. Jarlin Susanna, and DJ Hers get to round out the end of tier three. So, yeah, there's a lot of shiny names here, a lot of guys that are going to cost you a bundle in dynasty leagues, and I don't even know where to start. So I guess, Nate, we'll just go to you, Dylan Cruz, you know, top five prospect in all of baseball. Is he in my top five? I have to make sure I say that right.
Yeah, he's got to be.
Well, I guess, right? No, sorry, he's not in my top five, but top 15, I have him at 15. I was thinking Langford is my... I confused that for a second. But, yes, Dylan Cruz, he looks good this spring. What do you think, Nate?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Cruz looked ready when he was a high schooler in 2020, in my opinion. I know the Pirates, I think the Pirates drafted him and he turned him down, or they were going to draft him, but he had a really, really strong commit to LSU. I think it was LSU. Anyway. I mean, this kid has got five tool written all over him, exactly who you want at the top of your order, maybe even in the two hole, especially as he gets older and he gets more strength. I mean, I'm looking right now at MLB Pipeline's grading. They gave him a 70 hit tool, 70, with a 60 power and a 60 run. Now, offensively, you can't get much better than that, you know? The last hit tool I remember seeing that high was probably Vladito Guerrero. And, I mean, if you're getting comped to little Vladdy, you're doing something right. You're doing a lot right, because just as good as he is at the plate, he's almost as good in the outfield, in my opinion. So I know also that Pipeline has him graded at 65 overall. That's one of the highest overall grades I think I've ever seen from Pipeline. So, yeah, they're super high on him. I'm super high on him. I mean, what's not to like about Dylan Cruz? I mean, really and truly, he's only going to get better. That's the best part about it. I mean, yeah, his body is probably about peaked out, 6'2" 203. But the best part about that is he doesn't need any more body. You know, maybe he pushes to 210, 215 once he gets in that weight room and the Nats get those trainers out there. But does he need it? Not in particular, I don't think. He, you know, you're going to want to see something along the lines of, well, he only had 4 stolen bases last year, but his speed, his long speed, his speed in the outfield, I think is really what we're looking at here. His ability to turn, a double when he's on first base into an RBI for James Wood or whoever's behind him in the order, Brady House. Am I only allowed to talk about Dylan Cruz? By God, I want to talk about James Wood and Brady House so bad. Maybe we can get into that later.
I think we will. I think Cruz, the interesting thing to add on to what you're saying is his ETA. You know, ready to go. Didn't have a great AA experience, but do the Nationals season him so that he's up when he's up, he's achieved success? They're a team that's not going anywhere this year. I'm just curious as to when they actually give him the call up. I'm assuming he'll probably not make the team, and then we probably won't see him. But, you know, with the way baseball is, it's a little bit different than it's been in the past. So he'll be a very good case. I mean, college bat, he's going to be ready really quickly. But maybe he doesn't make the team because of the number 2 guy on the list who, in my mind, has the higher ceiling, but yes, probably the higher risk is too. What do you think, Mikey? Do you have Cruz ahead of Wood in your rankings? Do you think that he comes with a little bit more risk? What are your thoughts comparing those two guys?
Yeah, I've got Cruz ahead of Wood, but I wouldn't be surprised if James Wood gets the call up before Cruz. I mean, it's all going to come down to the swing and miss with James Wood. I mean, the size speaks for itself at 6'6". The guy's just got a ton of power. There's not many guys in the minors that you can adequately peg and say, hey, that guy's going to be a contender to hit 40 home runs in a year. But James Wood is that guy. The question is he going to establish enough contact to be able to hit 40 balls out of the park? So, just a tremendous upside player, but a huge risk because major league pitching is just a whole different ballgame than what he's been used to at Double A. So, I think Cruz is certainly the better all-around player. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. That's why he's going to be higher ranked, a higher floor, and almost as high of a ceiling probably as James Wood.
Just real fast, speaking to that ability to hit major league pitchers. Now, I know it's spring training and it's real early spring training, but the man already has 3 bombs and he's hitting like 400 or 500, something ridiculous like that thus far. Now, that's not to disagree with you at all, Mikey. That's just to simply point out that I think Wood probably hasn't been all that challenged in the minors thus far. I know last year he probably ended up with a 262 average, but his on-base percentage was 353 and his slugging was 520. So I'll live with that all day of every single day. And he's about to turn 22 in September. So anyway, sorry, I'm taking up all the time. Go ahead, Alex.
No, that's fine. But I was actually just about to say that myself, was how good of a spring that he's been having. And Cruz has sort of had the opposite of that. I mean, he looks good. He doesn't look overmatched, but he's just not quite doing what Wood is, but nobody is. Another guy then, this name I'll go ahead and discuss a little bit, because he's one that I've liked since his drafted 2021 days, where I thought he was just a smash no-brainer, going to be a superstar guy. And it didn't go as quickly for him as you would have hoped, but with some injuries in there and the youth that this guy had, I mean, as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, because he's still only 20, Brady House had a huge, very, what I mean, I don't want to say it's a breakout because it makes it sound like you didn't see this coming. It just, it's overdue in a way. He had just a fantastic year. And I think what happened was, you take a look back at this. Okay, so first of all, he gets drafted and he hits 322 in his 16 games in rookie ball. Looks fantastic. And comes out in 2022, gets hurt, and, you know, he actually wasn't hitting that bad. It just didn't have any power that we were expecting. And then last year, he comes out and, you know, he's hitting almost 300 above and gets all the way to double A as a 20-year-old. And so there really hasn't been long stretches of disappointment, just been lack of playing time and then lack of authority. But perhaps the injuries can explain some of that. Even though last year, you know, he has 12 home runs total and missed some time as well. The fact is, we know the power is there. I mean, you just look at this guy and he's huge. You know, he's 6'4", 215 pounds, probably doesn't stay at short for long. I mean, we have him listed as a third baseman on the site. It's fair. But he is, I'm very much in on him. I don't think he's a tier one player. I would get really close to putting him in there, but I do agree. But he is a guy that I don't know if you can still acquire on the cheaper side of things, but if you can, go and get him. His swing is a little funky to me in terms of, you know, having a hit tool that's going to play in the majors. I don't think he's hitting 300 in the majors, but I do see 30 homer popping that bat, and he's so young with such a high ceiling that it's a really scary trio that these guys have put together when you talk about two potential all-star outfielders and probably a fringe all-star infielder as well. Luckily, you've probably noticed we haven't talked a lot about the pitching side of things. For a Braves fan, that's nice. For the system, not so much. We will go to the next guy, but even he has some injury question marks. But that is a top three. I mean, is there a better top three in baseball than those guys right now? I mean, I'm trying to think of.
I'm having a hard time thinking of a better top three.
The Orioles,
maybe. But I mean, right now, thus far, for the teams that we've already covered. No, this has easily been number one. Can I just, I'm just going to add a little bit onto the House rant. I have always loved Brady House. Started watching him when he was like a sophomore in high school, just because of how big he was and how powerful he was. And to think that he's only 20 and he's already been to double A and everything that you just got done saying, Alex, scary. Really scary that somehow, some way, this kid who was taken 11th overall in 21 is somehow he's third in the system for the Nationals. I mean, by all means, this kid is a number one prospect on pretty much any other team in baseball, not named the Nationals or the Orioles or, you know, whatever. But I love Brady House. I love every single thing about him. And I think the hit tool is going to be better than we expected. I watched a mash, like a 425-foot shot the other day. And you're right, Alex. His setup is a little funky. But the way he turned on that fastball, oh, my God. He just dropped head. And the thing went 425, easy.
Easy.
So easy in-game power too. I mean, that's a huge difference between, you know, raw power, in-game power. So, and he's going to stick at third absolutely no matter what, because I remember watching this kid when he was 16 making incredible plays at short, but he's just too big to remain at short. So, yeah, I don't know that there are too many guys that are higher on House than I am. And I love them.
Yeah. Ryan Zimmerman 2.0 for them over there.
Absolutely. Better yeah. than Ryan Zimmerman.
Ooh, I like that. That's a bold take. Well, hey, we got to have a bold take episode here one of these days. Oh, yes. You got to save that one for that. Yes. We'll move on to number four here with Cade Cavalli. We've seen him in the big leagues. Unfortunately, as kind of as soon as he came up, he was down with the Tommy John surgery. Again, like I said, I'm not worried about pitchers like having their careers derailed from this. I think he will get back to what he was, so long as the team is smart, which there's no reason to think the Nationals wouldn't be smart with him. So we don't know exactly when he's coming back, but, you know, flamethrower, a guy that's very exciting. After that, though, Mikey, the system does take a little bit of a turn with some guys that maybe we've been waiting on a little bit. I mean, Elijah Green, Robert Hassel, Christian Vaccaro. These are guys that everybody was really, really high on at one point or the other. Even Jarlin Susanna is another guy. DJ Hertz. I mean, there's definitely a pattern here with guys that we're lacking a little bit from the potential that they saw. Out of those names, anybody that you still believe in that can maybe turn it around and get to that potential that we probably all of us had envisioned at one point or the other?
Yeah, I mean, I still look at Elijah Green as a potential impact bat. I mean, he's still really young. He's only 20. Definitely did not have a good year. Did not live up to the FYPD hype, you know, for those that were drafting last year. I mean, I think he was a pretty consensus top five draft pick in most first-year player drafts for most fantasy leagues. But he's still super young. Now, he's playing in a loaded outfield with Cruz and Wood as well. So, you know, where he lands, I don't necessarily know. Could be traded since it's an area of strength for them. But, I mean, the tools are there. So it's just a matter of him settling in and putting it all together. So I wouldn't bet against Elijah Green at this point. He may not be a true superstar, but still has a great chance to be a solid player.
Great pedigree too. Great pedigree too with his dad, Eric Green. He was the Pro Bowl tight end for the Steelers for years. I'm sorry, Alex, I cut you off. Were you going to ask me about Green?
Well, no, not about Green, but any of those names when we go to like Christian Vaccaro.
Oh, yeah.
Green, Hassel, Susanna, yes, DJ Hertz.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Robert Hassel III, to me, is a tier two. I don't know how he's not. You said he was a tier three, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens because, yeah, he ran into, double A last year. He didn't really have such a good year. But leading up to that, his numbers were always solid. He was the eighth overall pick in the 2020 draft out of high school, 22 years old. I think this year is his year to really bust through. I watched him go oppo this spring for a bomb. That was mighty fine to watch. Very easy stroke. I love this kid. His numbers, for whatever reason, haven't really been there aside from his first year, like the year he was drafted. However, in 2022, when he went through three different levels, his on-base percentage ended up being .357 with the .407 slugging. Now, that's not blow away by any stretch, but .357 is a damn good on-base percentage, in my opinion. That being said, he's always had the speed. Perhaps that may slow down as he gets older, but this kid is nice and lean and athletic. And right now, we're seeing what Colton Cowser can do. I think Robert Hassel III is maybe a year to a year and a half away from potentially being the next Colton Cowser.
I've followed him closely since he was drafted. And if you would have told me that he'd have a 32.9, 32% K rate, I would not have believed it in a million years. And that's what he had last year in AA, which is
insane. Well, he could fix that. He could fix that, because if anybody can fix it, it's Aaron Judge. And Aaron Judge had a K rate worse than that and a walk rate worse than that the year before he broke out, and he was able to switch it all around. So if a monster like Aaron Judge can flip it around, I'm pretty much I think in San Diego it was just a bad fit for him. Sometimes kids get drafted, not everything goes according to plan, and I like the way that the Nationals have him. There's a lot less pressure on the kid because he's no longer, you know, the golden boy who was taken eighth overall in that terrible 2020 draft. And I don't know. I still love Hassel. I really do.
Now, his time in Washington has certainly been worse than it was in San Diego, though. I mean,
I get that.
In San Diego, he needs to prove it. The thing that I think is the most convincing in you trying to say that you believe in him still, he's a tier two player, is what he's looked like in spring. He looks like a different player. Never seen that opposite field power play out. And like you said, the hit tool was always going to be the one that carried him. So it's much more likely that he is not a 31% strikeout guy than he is for sure. But man, what a fall. It is a huge fall. I mean, I was getting him up in the 30s and 40s of my top 100. And
absolutely. Without question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all right. One thing for me to just kind of wrap it up on Hassel.
Yes, please.
What concerns me is that if I look at the year over year production that this guy's had, what I see is I see a decline in batting average. I see a decline in power. I see a decline in speed. I see an uptick in strikeouts. K percentage has gone up from 21 to 22 to 23. So really every metric, basic metric that we look at, this guy's just not checking the boxes. And what that tells me, without diving too much into his video, I haven't done that, but what it tells me is that there's probably some problems with making adjustments as this guy is advancing. So still young enough to turn it around, but if you're asking if I'm in or out on Hassel, I'm definitely in the out category.
The other guy really quickly.
Fair enough.
The other guy I want to quickly go in was Jarlene Susanna, 19-year-old, throwing 100, developing some other pitches. Another guy that people were super excited about. I was, Yuri Perez 2.0 type of things.
You were.
Weird to say because, Yuri's, a year older than him anyway. But
that's crazy.
Yeah, Susanna hasn't, if you take out a couple of his first starts in the beginning of the year, he finishes the year really, really well, nearly under a 3 ERA, lots of strikeouts, has all the stuff. He's huge body, 19 years old. Not really a guy that maybe you need to go invest crazy in because he's so far away and he's 19 and he's a pitcher. But, man, it's hard to ignore those types of guys. Let's see if we can get through these last two teams here. We'll go to the Mets, and then we'll finish off with the Phillies. Let's see. We got about, hopefully we can get this done quickly enough so that we're not spending your whole evening with us, although that's certainly not the worst thing in the world, I'd imagine. But let's talk about the Mets. Now, the Mets at a crossroads in terms of, where they're headed at the major league roster. It almost, and if they were talking about parallel universes and alternate dimensions, I would have loved to see what the Mets would have done if they just trusted some of their prospects and let them come up instead of going with some of these other guys that haven't worked. And it seems like they don't give them a lot of leeway.
I mean,
it seems like Vientos, he didn't come up and dominate right away. And then, Brett Beatty came up and he struggled. And so they're kind of off on him now. It feels like I wish they could just be horrible. as a Braves fan, but in order to get these guys major league experience as well. It could be scary if all those guys developed. Now, tier one, again, I know, Mikey, you're really conservative when it comes to tier one. I think I'm ready to get Jet Williams into that tier one. I don't know about Acuna. To me, I'd put Acuna actually probably in tier three and towards the middle. I just don't see, like, fantasy-wise why he would be this high. But let me, like, get your thoughts on another Braves fan perspective on the Mets.
Yeah, I don't have Jet Williams in tier one now, but I think he will solidly be there at the end of the year. He's got potential to be a top 15 prospect probably by the end of the season. Super small guy. He's only 5'6", but he's incredibly fast, has very good hit tool with establishing contact with the bat in his hand. They're going to move him to center field probably. He's not going to be a shortstop for them. I've been hearing center field is going to kind of be his future spot, and that'll be just fine. But yeah, I'm all in on Jet Williams.
Okay, I have to say this. I've been meaning to say this for a long time. If you go to our reviews on iTunes, you'll see really quality, I think like a 4.8, 4.9, which is fantastic because we do this out of the generosity of our lives. We don't get paid for it. I'm doing, you know, we're taking time out of our Friday nights, Nate and I, to do this. And then we have one written review from a Mets fan who says all we do is bash on them too much, and that
what
he wanted to like our show, but too much Mets bashing. And so
what?
This is for this guy. Yeah, I know, it's crazy, right? This is for that guy. I don't know his name, but I have Jet Williams already in the top 15. I have him 11th overall. So there's your Mets bashing.
Oh. Ay, chihuahua. Well, I can get on that Mets backing horse as well, right here, right now, Alex, for listener A out there. Drew Gilbert came over from Houston. Now, Mikey and I made a trade last year in the Zao Dynasty. Remember that trade, Mikey?
I do.
Kyle Manzardo for Drew Gilbert. I know there was maybe one or two other players involved, but I am still a huge fan of Gilbert. And I'm sorry, that's who I got in the trade. And I traded away Manzardo, which was incredibly hard for me because he's a Washington State Cougar. Go Cougs. That was my BA alma mater. And but regardless, we're talking about the Mets, not the the Guardians yet. So 289 average, 381 on base percentage, 487 slugging. That's a 868 OPS for those of you doing the math at home. 116 games he played, 433 at bats, 125 hits, 79 runs scored, which would be a lot higher once he gets to the big league level. 26 doubles, 3 triples, 18 bombs, 59 ribs, and let's see here, only 12 steals. That's a little underwhelming. I think he's got more like outfield speed than he does on the base pass, but sometimes you find that. I love everything there is to love about Drew Gilbert. I just love his swag. I mean, he's only 5'9", but he's a 195. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, how swole can you get? Luis Angel, not a huge fan, but you know who I am a huge fan of? Christian Scott. Got this guy last year off the waiver wire, and all he did was straight up deal all year long. 257 ERA, 19 games started, 87.2 innings pitched, only 63 hits last year, folks, only 5 home runs. And he only walked 12 hitters, struck out 107 with an opponent's average of 199. And this is the best part yet. His whip last year was 086 and a 257 ERA. Now, Christian Scott was a fifth rounder in 2021. really was under the radar, but he's 6'4", listed at 215. I'd probably say he's closer to 220, maybe 225 in the end, but great fastball, good secondary stuff, but the overwhelmingly predominant tool is his control. And when you're in the minors and you can paint inside of the strike zone and still get 107 strikeouts through 87 and two thirds, that, my friends, is a formula for success at the major league level, because there's nothing better than walking nobody and striking out 107 guys through 80 something innings pitched. I also like Colin Houck, the kid they just drafted, and I also like Blade Tidwell and Mike Vassell. So take that, Mets fan, John Doe. I'm actually a big fan of this system. I like the Mets system a lot, actually.
Yeah, I guess it's all to say, go write us a nice review so we can get that one off of the top one for all the listeners out there. If you like us, if you don't like us, then don't write a review. But as you were preaching there, it is interesting that Acuna and 5'8", Williams 5'6", as Mikey mentioned, and Drew Gilbert 5'9", very, very short. But that, I don't care about any of that. At least, I mean, Acuna, I just don't think fantasy wise he's going to be as valuable as Jet Williams. I think Jet Williams is going to steal 30 to 40 bases. I mean, he's just as close to, I don't know if he's an 80 grade runner, but he's got to be really close to it. And the power is legit. The hit tool's legit. The attitude is great. He's a shortstop. Like, I just don't know what else you'd want in a prospect. Kind of look at the guys, okay, Mikey, are you in on Jet Williams or no?
Yeah, I'm all in on Jet Williams.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So
you had him at 11.
I got him at 11. Because look at the names that I have behind him. I mean, Roman Anthony, Walker Jenkins, Evan Carter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd rather have a shortstop that's going to steal 40 bases.
You got him ahead of Carter, huh?
Yeah. I mean, Carter's not going to do anything like that fantasy-wise.
I'm not that high on him, but I've already acquired Jet this offseason and I think three of my nine dynasty leagues. So I'm trying to acquire him and anywhere I can.
Yeah, you're in nine fans dynasty leagues.
I have nine. Yeah.
Sweet mother.
Yeah. So 13 homers, 44 stolen bases as a 19-year-old last year.
Somehow he only has a 60 grade speed. He must just have like incredible instincts.
Who's giving him the 60 grade? I wonder.
MLB pipeline. MLB pipeline.
What does FanGraphs have him at? What, Mikey? I look this up really quick, we'll come back to him. Acuna, what do you think him at number one in this system?
Yeah, I wasn't involved in the Mets rankings. I wouldn't have ranked Acuna first. It'd be Williams first for me. I don't even know if I'd have Acuna in the same tier as him. Like you, I don't think he's going to be a great fantasy prospect guy. He'll be an adequate major leaguer. But I'm not that high on Acuna.
FanGraphs has him at 70 speed, so that's kind of where I would say 75 to 70 is fair.
Well, I mean, it's got to be closer to 70 because the guy stole 45 bases last year.
Right.
I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Mikey, with what you're saying about Acuna. Certainly a very valuable piece for this team in its future, but he is not like his brother, but nobody is. So.
To say the very least.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot of guys I wanted to talk about, Nate. So the only other one is Ronnie Mauricio, which we don't need to spend a lot of time on. he's a guy though. If you're rebuilding, he would be a target of mine in any leagues that I'm like, I'm out this year, but I want to rebuild in a year or two, because the person that has him isn't going to get much this year from him. So if they're going for it, he's a perfect guy that a team going for it would trade away. And then he's not going to come back and dominate, I would imagine, after that type of injury. And so you might have kind of a like O'Neill Cruz, right?
Right. I mean,
you want O'Neill Cruz this year, not from last
absolutely
year. And so you know, he's a guy that you could get as a rebuilding year, because it's just it's an AACL, it's horrible, it takes a long time, but you're getting him for a lot more than just you know, speed, which I think will come back, as we've seen with Acuna, right? The ACL, you can come back from that, especially at a young age. But
he's only 22, just turned he's about to turn 23. Talk about such a, I mean, I went all in on Mauricio a couple of years ago. I mean, all in, traded for him in every league. I'm only in two dynasty leagues, Mikey. So, you know, but I'm very new to the dynasty thing, but I'm picking it up quite quickly. How sad I was to hear about his, that was in Dominican League, wasn't it? The Dominican Winter League. Ugh, God. Anyway, I just had to get that one out there.
Very, so very sad to see, because he was gonna get, you know, a full allotment of at bats this year, and
it's gonna
be exciting to see. Kind of, you know, we mentioned about Max Meyer and getting guys before they come back from injuries, and we see them kind of return to their themselves. That is Matt Allen, a guy that I was very high on, before his injury. And so if he comes back, you know, it's going to be too late. This guy was, you know, I'm just taking a look at it. The Baseball Reference Pipeline had him up to 75. Prospectus had him at 79. I probably had him up there close to 50 as well. Yep. So it's been, you know, we haven't seen him since 2019.
Nope.
That's a long time. But cheap, right? He's now, the difference between him and the other guys is that he's been injured now multiple times without coming back, which is nerve-wracking. But
Mike,
much cheaper.
When they put together his instructs video, oh God, he looked incredible at 20, I think he was. 6'4", 6'5", you know. 215, 220, spotting everything. Everything was moving. I mean, God, he looks so good. And then boom. Was it Tommy John?
Yeah, and something else too. I'd have
yeah, to I think it was a little
obviously been like 3 years now.
Well, yeah. I remember it was Tommy John, and then he also had like a freak injury or something that had to do with his legs or his back or something like that. But yes, Matt Allen. I'm looking right now on Pipeline. They don't even have him in their top 30. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So it was a Tommy John surgery in 2021, and then an ulnar nerve transposition surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you move some stuff around again in that elbow in 2022. And then in January of 2023, also had another elbow surgery.
When he was starting to come back.
Revision surgery. Yeah, so three surgeries. So certainly you're going to get him for a lot cheaper. He may not be a good example of a guy that's, you know, going to come back to be the that's some career derailing things, but it's a good segue to our next guy, because he sort of reminds me a lot of Matt Allen. And we're going to head to the Phillies now to talk about Andrew Painter, who also is dealing with an injury. This one, I was almost convinced he was going to have Tommy John surgery, but he never ended up getting it. Although he did miss almost, he missed all of 2023. I guess I didn't see the update. So he's going to miss all of 2024 with TG. So he ended up getting it. Okay, that makes more sense.
So
they just waited. Sorry, I wasn't up to date on this. So they waited until this year
A year later.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair enough. So still tier one though, Mikey. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's on the the basis of the stuff that he showed prior to injury. It certainly sucks that they kind of limped him along a little bit without getting surgery instead of going to a full stop, getting surgery, and then being able to come back, you know, maybe late this year. Now he's going to miss the whole year. But the stuff plays. And so, as we all know, you know, TJ is not the death sentence that it once was. And so, you know, if you can reasonably expect him to get back to 90, 95% of what he once was, which was excellent, then that stands to reason that he is still a tier one caliber guy. So I can easily see him making, you know, half a dozen all-star games in his career. So I'm still bullish on him for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I had him in 35. So right on the fringe. Little bit of a difference, right, between the guy we just mentioned in Matt Allen, in that, you know, he wasn't injured again. It was rather they kind of just saw if he could fix it, and then he couldn't. So we'll see how he recovers from it. 20 years old, still very, very young. Just some guy that you maybe go and acquire this year towards the middle of the season, a team that's going for it or is pushing their chips all in and has him. Another guy like Ronnie Mauricio you might be able to get. Mm-hmm. Knowing that your season's over and probably most of next year, if we're being honest too, these guys aren't going to throw much more than I would imagine 100 innings in 2025.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll see. After that, there is a little bit of a drop off, at least in my mind. These guys didn't hit my top 100. But we have Justin Crawford at number two, Mick Abel.
Love it. Love it.
People love Mick Abel too. I never have, but Aiden Miller at number four, and we'll end there. So I know you've talked about Crawford a ton, so let's keep it short, Nate. what do you like about this guy so much to have him in there at number two?
Well, you know, before he was number two on our list and number four on Pipeline's list, before really anybody knew in a whole lot about him other than being Carl Crawford's actual son. I met the man at the draft in 2022. And after speaking with his dad for about 15, 20 minutes while his son was being interviewed right after being drafted 17th overall by the Phils, which was cool enough, talking to Carl Crawford for 15, 20 minutes. He then introduced me to the man of the hour. And shaking hands with him, now I'm 6'5". shaking hands with him, I looked him dead in the eye, and I do not remember him being any shorter than me. And he's listed at 6'4", 188. And I remember thinking that the MO on this kid was that he was just like his dad and he was fast as hell. But this is the difference between his dad and him, is that I truly believe he's more athletic than his dad was, which is saying a lot. He's only 20 years old. Last year he hit 332. I know that was only single A and single A advanced, but hey, he can't control where he's at. 332 with an on-base percentage. This is my best. This is my favorite part. On-base percentage was 392. That's a 60-point uptick from the year before when he was just in the rookie leagues. He ended the season with, I'm guessing 47 stolen bases, 22 doubles, 8 triples, 3 bombs. But as I always say, all of the time, the power will eventually come. It just will. And this is a kid that is entirely too athletic for the power, the in-game power, to not come. I'm not talking 35 home runs. I'm not even talking really 25. I'm talking more 15, 20. But this kid has Kenny Lofton type style written all over him. Definitely has his dad, top of the order, and just as high as you are on Jet Williams, I'm probably just as high on Justin Crawford.
Yeah, I think as long – when I think of Carl Crawford, I always think about a guy that was had some pop. Just if you don't even worry about the power and you fully expect that, then you'll – I think you'll be pleasantly pleased with Justin Crawford and the amount of speed and contact that he's going to get. And this sort of guy is making a resurgence with Victor Scott and, you know, Esther Ruiz – and Bradfield with the Orioles. Like, these guys are coming up that maybe they never hit more than 10 home runs in a year, but you need these guys on your team with everybody stealing. I mean, did you get, how many stolen bases did Freddie Freeman have last year?
Like 15 probably.
Yeah. These guys are just gonna, I think it was even like 20 something. These guys are gonna steal a lot. If you can get 40 to 50 to 60 stolen bases from guys, all of a sudden, you know, you're leading the league in stolen bases instead of kind of being in the middle of the pack. So these guys are going to be more valuable as we move forward, which I get Justin Crawford being number two. But I like Aiden Miller a lot. In fact, as I looked over my list, I did squeak him in at number 97 on my list. So I guess I misspoke a little bit earlier. He did just make it. And Mick Abel, what, you know, Mikey, those two guys there, you know, I bet if we ordered this up, it might come out different, but I think I'd have Aiden Miller over Crawford and over Abel. I'm interested in how you would kind of order this two, three, four.
Yeah, I don't have my rankings with me, so I'm not sure exactly how I ranked them. Just off the top of my head though, I probably would go Abel, Miller, Crawford.
I figured it would be different for all of us. That's how like unique these three are. I think usually we can kind of agree on one or the other, but I could see people liking all these guys for different reasons. So let me hear what your reasons are.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Abel, for him it's just command, right? I mean, everybody says that the stuff that he has is really good. He can throw four pitches, you know, but he just so far has had a hard time you know, commanding that. And so, you know, that's always scary as a pitcher, because if that command never comes, then he never becomes a viable, even middle of the rotation, you know, type pitcher. But, you know, the upside for Abel is higher than the other two. Aiden Miller's got a lot of love in the FYPDs this spring. You know, they're calling him a bit of a sleeper, you know, to take, you know, towards the back half of your first round in your drafts. You know, and just Justin Crawford for me, you know, a speed guy. I don't think he ever gets to 10 home runs personally. I don't think he's a slap hitter, but he's more of a line drive guy. But I, you know, for me, he doesn't walk a ton either. And so, you know, if he's hitting 265, his OBP is probably going to be below 325. And to me, that's not good enough as a leadoff guy. So he's more of an 8-hole, 9-hole hitter guy. And to me, that's all that valuable for fantasy.
Where are you getting all those averages and those OBPs there, Mikey?
I would project him in the majors. I don't see him hitting above 275, and I don't see his OBP being much higher than 325.
Okay.
Well, it's a great example of this type of prospect that you should always be aware of. The variance there, right? There's not a lot of outs for Crawford if he doesn't hit like Nate's saying he is going to, because if he doesn't, then it's like game over, right? No matter how good his defense is, no matter how much speed he has, like he's got to hit that he essentially has to hit better than 275 for him to be a fantasy star. Right. So that's the question. And we don't know. We just don't know if he's going to develop into that. I love the bloodlines. So part of me goes with Nate. But then I see, you know, the approach and the power, the lack thereof, and I lean to Mikey. So, yeah, I don't know. He's a guy that we're going to have to keep track of for sure. Let me go on to tier three because, you know, the Phillies have had the Braves number the last 2 years. And this guy, Orion Karakeng, comes out of nowhere and threw a slider that didn't seem to be physically possible in the playoffs. And also threw like 98, 99. And I had never heard of him essentially before. September.
You weren't the only one. You weren't the only one.
So what the hell is this guy doing in tier three? This guy
is like, yeah.
Craig Kimbrell prime version in my eyes here.
Is this question for me?
Sure. Yeah. Yep. I mean, I need some sympathy here. Another guy that saw what I saw.
Oh yeah. I mean, he was, I had heard of Orion, but I hadn't really seen a whole lot of him until the playoffs. And, you know, as a Braves fan, I wasn't excited to see him, because his stuff just looked filthy. I don't anticipate that they'll give him a high leverage role coming to start the season, especially with the playoff aspirations and really World Series aspirations that they have. And they've got other really good options in that bullpen. But this will be a guy that'll get to, you know, come in sixth, seventh inning and just dominate guys and just flash that ability to be a lockdown closer in the future. So, if I were a Phillies fan, I'd be pretty darn excited that we've got a guy in the pipeline that's going to be the, you know, their version of Kimbrel, if you will.
Yeah, and what you said makes absolute perfect sense. But then to a non-baseball person that just follows the postseason, like, they put him in the most crucial situations in the playoffs. You know, like, why wouldn't they just thrust him into these high leverage innings early on? But you're saying, again, that to keep him fresh and keep his future in check. So it's a weird sport that way because it does get more high pressure than, I mean, he's used to it, right? I mean, he was perfectly great. So yeah, I just, you know, I'm loving him in terms of just not getting any value. I mean, you said they got great options. And you know, the names, they have been there, but also they don't necessarily scream, there's no way these guys can't fail. That's Gregory Soto, Jeff Hoffman, and Jose Alvarado. Now, when they're on, don't get me wrong, they're fantastic, but they've also been off their share of times too. And if Orion's not, like, by May, he could be closing games for them. So, you know, saves a big part of fantasy. A guy that you can get, I think, for cheap. And like you said, even if he's not a closer, he's going to be having like a 1.4 ERA if he's fit, right, you know, in the sixth and seventh inning, and they use him that way. He's just going to have crazy numbers to help you out.
And he'll probably have more innings pitched than, you know, Tyler Glass now by the end of the season. You know what I mean? Because these relievers, they get used so often and because they're just so filthy. But also just the entire culture of baseball has changed so much when it comes to starting pitchers anymore. I mean, that's pretty much the whole reason Blake Snell's still a free agent. You know, this was 20 years ago. Snell wouldn't have been available for 13 seconds.
Like you said, guys going 4 or 5 innings, tie ball game, they come out, boom, Orion comes in for 2 innings, the Phillies score 2, you get a win. Playing in hold leagues, you know, he's going to have a ton of holds, especially if they do saves / holds, you know.
Yep.
Either way, you're going to be set with him. So, you know, for me, there's just so many ways that he gets to success. But again, we're talking about a reliever here. I mean, it's a reliever only profile, so I guess that's probably why we're talking tier 3. But for fantasy, we need those guys.
Absolutely.
And they're hard to acquire. Like, if you're trying to get saves through the pipeline and through prospects, it's just such a crapshoot. You just don't know who ends up in the bullpen and who gets to the starting line and who, I don't know. It's hard to do. So he's one of the few prospects that you can see having a clear path to saves down the line, whether it be this year or in the next couple of years. So a very important name to discuss, which after that, I don't see a lot of names that get me too excited. And that's to say, again, that the Phillies and the Braves are similar in a lot of respects, that, you know, there's not a lot of room for prospects. Every position's pretty much settled in. And they've, you know, acquired assets using some of these prospects in the past. And there's nobody that really stands out. Let me hear from you guys though, Mikey. Do you see anybody here that we should maybe touch on before we head on out?
Yeah, one guy that I really like he's going to be available in most any dynasty league unless it's really deep is catcher Eduardo Tate. Now whether he stays as a catcher, hard to know because the kid's only 16, but had a pretty impressive debut in the Dominican League last year. Those numbers are great and all. It's going to be interesting to see what he does stateside. But if he does perform stateside, he will shoot up the rankings and get on the radar of other fantasy owners. But there's definitely some promise there with that kid. So, as far as a deep guy, he's probably the name on the list that I like the most.
Damn, that is a deep dive.
That is 17, because
17-year-old 17, catcher.
Yeah, well, and he hits lefty too, so you always love seeing that. Cool. And his ETA is a 2028.
Yeah. Nah, they got Ethan Salas is gonna change all that. These guys are coming up.
Yep, he's gonna change. They're gonna change everything.
What about you, Nate? Any one more name for me?
Yeah. It's unfortunate because he's dealt with injuries already, but prior to 2023, Griff McGarry was arguably one of the better arms in the entire system. Last year, he took a major dive because he was hurt. He only threw, 50 innings or so, 50-60 innings. So he was able to come back a little, but I mean, he was monitored the whole way. But prior to that, in 2021, 2.96 ERA, 2022, through three levels and not just, single A advanced. He started a single A advanced, then he went to double A. Then he ended up in AAA, and in AA in 2022, he made, 7 starts, 32 and 2/3 innings pitched. He had a 2.20 ERA with 39 strikeouts. He did have a lot of walks, but his opponent's average was only 123. So this is a guy who's got incredible stuff. Great fastball, great slider. He just has a really hard time keeping it within the strike zone. But, that's something that you can teach and also learn. So I'm not completely out on McGarry. I drafted him pretty heavily in the Zao Dynasty, and one last name, just because he's fun, outfield / first baseman Carlos De La Cruz, standing at a whopping 6'8". They have him listed at 210, but there's no way he weighs 210. He's probably like 240. Last year, in double A, he hit 259 at a 344 on base percentage, 454 slug, played in 129 games, 509 at bats, ended up with 24 bombs. He struck out about 4 million times, but, he's 6'8". So, but a fun little prospect. You'll get him for absolutely zilch. And, he scored 80 runs and had 67 ribs, 24 bombs, 25 doubles. So could be worse.
All right. I think we did it. Got through the entire NL East in a little over an hour. So well done, guys. Good job. We are done with a couple of divisions now. We still have a few more to go. So keep tuning in as we continue to get those knocked off the list before the season starts. And of course, we do have the top 199 or so prospects that was released on the site. We're going to have an episode for that as well. Those are always fun to discuss. And I know Mike participated in there. So yeah, top 190. It's always a different number. I always have to check. So 190 prospects. So we'll get to that. We have obviously the other divisions. Let me see if I remember which ones. We need to do the we did the Central. I think we did. No.
No. No. We haven't touched the Central. We haven't touched either leagues.
Either Central. So, okay. So we got a few more to do. But appreciate Michael Kelly coming on. Nate. As always, a pleasure. And then if you guys that are listening, still listening, you must like us enough to at least keep this playing on in the background. Go give us that 5-star review if you'd like, and then write a nicer review. And it would be really funny, honestly, if like we got 8 or 9 or 10 reviews and they were all bashing the Mets in response to that. I think that would be great. Not to say that that's what this podcast is about. I mean, I got Jet Williams number. I'm going to have to get a tattoo of that. I'm like Jet Williams number 11. You can't say about it.
Oh, yeah. Man. And Drew Gilbert, baby. Drew Gilbert. You got
Drew Gilbert, yeah. And I know Mikey loves the Mets too. So.
Yeah, I know Mikey loves the Mets.
I love the fact that Chipper Jones named his son Shay.
So, yeah, that's such a brave thing to say right there.
Wow. Wow.
Fantastic. All right. We'll leave on now. This is Futures Focus. Thank you again for listening. Check out the site and we'll be back next week to discuss another top 50 list for the 2024 season. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.